Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about the story of Sophie Blanchard, the balloon aeronaut for Napoleon, who eventually raised herself up in a hydrogen balloon and launched fireworks, which set the balloon afire and in front of a crowd in Paris at all fall down. She made around 60, 70 balloon flights, and she was one of the early pioneers. Now, in this story, I'm going to do several things. One is, in the background, you'll probably hear trees being chopped down. This is a horrible, horrible thing that people do around here. They're chopping down these, they're non-native trees, I think they are. But it's always sad to hear more trees come down around the place, and you hear some more traffic sound comes through. It's pretty amazing that, you know, a tree comes down and people can actually hear it. You know, hear the sound shadow of that tree coming away. That's just a side point about how we're doing it. The other context is that I'm a teacher, and there's something about bringing a helium bottle into a classroom and inflating a few helium balloons and letting them play with it and produce neutral buoyancy, and a discussion of balloons. And one of the more interesting things is that the big airships were made out of the inner membranes of cows. They were cow bubbles, and they'd be stitched together. And indeed, you yourself are a balloon. And what happens is that when they want to do surgery inside you, they perk yourself inside, and you've got a gas-proof membrane inside you, and you inflate like a balloon. They inflate you like a balloon, and you inflate, and your body is inflated with carbon dioxide gas, and they can get in there. So it lifts your flesh off away from your organs. That's quite an interesting thing to go in. So one of the things is to, as people doing it, quietly stitch in the story of Sophie's story, Sophie's ballooning tragedy story. Now, there's lots of history of science aspect in there. One is that the idea of flight, being lifted in a balloon, was just happened around all early 1700s, the 18th century, began to be the flights, and this was really the moonshot of the age. The idea of someone being able to fly was incredible. And there's some story about the early paper merchants in Paris saw this, and the hot vapor smoke was put under a balloon, and they lifted aloft, and I think they lifted the boom was lifted aloft, and then could you lift a human, something go into the sky? And so I think they had a duck and some other thing, and there was this discussion, a duck and some other animal. Could the duck go up there? I think it was a duck and a chicken or something like that. And the duck is used to flying high, so it would survive, but the chicken, we don't know, coming down. But the story about this one, I think, I remember them being paper manufacturers and two brothers and stuff like that. They were in the era of science where Aristotle still reigned, and we're in the history era of science where classical physics still reigns, and we've moved on. But at that time, Aristotle reasoned that clouds are light, clouds want to go to heaven, so that's why they go up. So no reasoning behind it. So if you make smoke and steam, that steam will rise up. And that is actually true, that steam is lighter than air. Steam is basically your hydrogenated gas. So your hot air balloon had a lot of hot air and a lot of hot, moist air inside this balloon, and this lifted it up. And so in Paris, there was hot air ballooning, and great crowds would gather to see a hot air balloon go up into the sky, and there'd be great interest in it. And it became part of the culture. Every major event had to have a firework. It's sort of like, I can't think of what a major event now would have to have, the press editor or something like that. So it became part of the culture that you required ballooning for major events in Europe. This is before the Napoleonic Wars, of course. This is the restoration, not the restoration period, the, I forgot what the period is, Jane Austen, that style of Pride and Prejudice, that sort of thing, you'd go in a bloom, and there's obviously people would see balloons and there'd be more and more great things to go with it, and as with all balloons, this is bubbles, so to speak, people get involved, and the initial success of the initial person has a lot of factors going for them. The next entrance in can often find themselves struggling. Just hold that thought for a moment. Now, the thought going forward about balloons, there was this idea of men were going up in the balloons. What about a woman going up in a balloon? Now, in fact, I think a couple of years before this famous Citoyen Henry, this Citizen Henry, this is the revolution, some sort of time, so was a beautiful French maiden who was a good looker, didn't weigh too much, was going to be carried aloft on a balloon. And this was going to be big things. And the police then put an injunction on him. He had an injunction. He was not allowed to take this female passenger up in the balloon, which is, you know, extraordinary. And the reasoning was that for two reasons. One, it was impropriety that you should have a man and a woman together in a confined space. That would offend sensibility. And eventually they got that overturned by saying, look, men and women get into carriages. There's no different. The carriages are going up. The other set of ideas was for the protection of the women, because there is no idea of the women's constitution is much fairer and weaker. It could be putting her in danger to actually lift a woman. If a man could go up, surely a woman can't actually go in a balloon. But eventually that was overturned, and she got up there for a while and was the celebrity for a couple of days. The French press chased this beautiful woman around, you know, to say what was it like going up in a balloon, etc., etc. And you can see how the imagination is just one little step at a time. You know, if you suddenly had a 707 land, it would just blow people away. They were just one little step at a time. Now, Sophie Blanchard is someone who we're going to come in, and she's a very influential person. Now, around this time, there was the idea of a balloon as a cultural thing. There's no idea of using the balloon to take atmospheric measurements or for the observation that you could take. So this is one of the things which I read an article saying that Napoleon was not really an innovator. He used his artillery in the same way each time. He used the same principles all the time. And he had such things as military observation balloons available to him, which could have given him a great advantage, in battles. But he didn't use it. And so Napoleon didn't use balloons. This is a story I think I probably studied that probably when I was 13 years old. I read an article about that for a long time ago. I can't remember. It was some insanely old, out-of-date book which made this set of observations that Napoleon was not such a genius after all. I'm not ascribing to it. It's just one of the things you read, you pick up, and you say, oh, I'll file that away. Napoleon, not the greatest man for science and a whole heap of things. Now, to also remember that the age Australia featured at this era, not only were people going up to the balloons, the French sent an expedition, a fairly large expedition, down to Australia and got a whole heap of kangaroos and emus and wombats and you name it, and they took them back to Paris, and as was the thing, that these rare animals would be given to the king to keep in his menagerie, his private zoo. And this was given back to Napoleon. Napoleon sponsored this very expensive expedition during the Napoleonic Wars. Now, the interesting thing is that during the wars, there was this idea that science had a free passport. You could have a scientific passport. So you could go right through a battle. Look, I'm doing science. that's political stuff, I'm doing science, and there's a mutual respect of science over the place. So they sent expeditions up to Australia and picked up these. And look, I'm saying this in terms of teaching Australian students, of course. And Josephine, who was Napoleon's love in Malmaison in Paris, a little sort of moderately sized property in Paris, a sort of elegant property in Paris. But around there, they said, well, we'll just release them and show Napoleon and his lover in Paris used to have kangaroos and emus bopping around the place. And it's like, oh, how unusual. And so it's that unusualness that people were searching. There was the sense that something was going to happen in the age, and there was the Industrial Revolution still hadn't happened. So you've got to understand this. This is pre-Industrial Revolution, so everyone would be making bespoke muskets, and you know, there'd be lots of activity here, lots of blacksmiths all over the place, lots of forging, lots of pollution, lots of poverty, and the upper class would be very rich and coming across. And you had the balloons, you know, this is the big thing, balloons are happening. And so we had this adventure, and then not soon after, people added to balloons. This is the brilliant idea of parachutes. They would get in a balloon, and one person would jump out with a parachute and land on the ground with a parachute, and it was all this great, great wonder of it. And then very soon after, Citizen Henry was taken up. She was eclipsed by women going up. Families, whole families of women going up and jumping out of balloons with parachutes. It was a, you know, this is who could possibly think of all this combination of things. And there was a sort of very similar rerun of this with the Russians' cosmonaut program. As soon as they got the first woman, Yuri Gagarin, and orbit, I think they had got a dog, a man, and then a woman in that. Sequence. They're very, very important to actually get that tagged up. So around, I think, some of the other cities in France, there was other balloons, and there was a ballooner, and he had a family with four children, and he said, I'm off ballooning, and he left the children to suffer in poverty, and met up with this a tryst, was that what we call it, with Sophie Blanchard. I think she had her maiden name. She married him, so I don't know how this goes on, but often in this history, you find that a lot of people are multiply married, so I don't know quite how this happened. But she was sort of a little bit unusual in terms of that she was very small, very flighty, looked a bit like a bird, was very thin boned, didn't weigh very much, so she was ideal for a balloon. And she just would be very fidgety and hop around a bit like a bird. And you know, this is as it's told in the time, and just socially just very distractible. And obviously people balloon bird, but woman bird, but stuff like that. And she went up with her husband. Now, a husband couple goes up in a balloon. Who could have thought goes up in a balloon? And so this ballooning idea goes eventually into the German airships. It's sort of a wonderful connection going forward. Now, the story is that she and her husband went up several times. The husband, I think, had a heart attack and fell out of the balloon and died. And so she was left with a balloon and hot air balloons. And this is where you get a fire and you heat it underneath. You get a fuel fire and it goes underneath. I don't know how it works. Here with these hot air balloons, and she had a massive debt because You have to sort of understand these are capital investments done by people who weren't necessarily rich. They're people trying to get in on the act. And so it's sort of like sportsmen or people who become celebrity greats through other paths. You can come a celebrity, you can marry in, you can have a business, you can do military. There's all different things to come into the pantheon of celebrity them. And so she began being a solo female balloonist, which is, that is a female running a balloon franchise. And of course, what would happen is you'd be in debt, and you'd have to, you had a balloon, you had to then do a stunt to get people. And so people would pay money to go into the park, and they'd collect the money, and that would pay. So there'd be various things. I think the person running facilities say, oh, we're going to have a balloonist. How much is that going to cost? Oh, that costs the 1,000 francs. It's generally about 1,000 francs, which is a lot of money then. And then they would say, well, how are we going to raise it? We'll charge people coming in to do it. So there's some sort of franchise there. And basically every major ceremony, anything which was a big do, you couldn't really televise it, so you'd have the balloon there. Now, this is all going well, and Napoleon comes to power, and Napoleon has his chief balloonist, so the state will have the state balloonist. And this particular balloonist had a bit of bad luck, and he got blown off course. Now, I don't quite understand how this goes, because once he gets blown off, and so for some reason people blow to Rome. Now, I don't know quite how this happens, but he crash landed in Rome, and everyone began to laugh at Napoleon and his balloonists and how stupid the French were. And of course, Napoleon said, I don't know this person. I can't do a French, even a Napoleonic accent. I can't do any sort of accent. I don't know this person. Get rid of him. Who else should be this balloon one? And of course, Napoleon, a female balloon woman, and the idea was very good. Now, the legend is, and there is some evidence that Napoleon spoke with this balloon woman, who convinced him, or he had the idea of ballooning his army from France to England. So he had a big build-up. Now, one of the interesting things is that, and this is an interesting thing, that essentially to build the big army, he had an army of 200,000 people in north of France ready to invade England, and they had these really, it turned out to be dodgy boats, which weren't good enough. They had the British fleet. Now, this is before Trafalgar. So the British were blockading the Spanish and the French fleets, as they did the British Navy. It's quite interesting to see what the British were doing. And there is talk that the French were going to tunnel underneath the channel, and the French were going to balloon over the top. And of course, no doubt there was some talk, but I don't think there was any balloons constructed capable of carrying this person. Now, of course, this balloonist was a very light person. Of course, you're a big burly French soldier with a cannon. You know, I don't think you'd possibly be able to take a cannon up on a balloon. And a lot of the balloons operated on, you know, getting rid of ballast really quickly. But one of the things is that these troops, 200,000 troops in north of France, just waiting to invade, get very bored, very upset, you know, this time. And so they had lots of parades and medal givings and balloon flying, you know, that entertain them with balloon flights. But I suppose the important thing is to fund this massive invasion fleet. Napoleon sold the United States Louisiana, called the Louisiana Purchase. The Louisiana Purchase, this is the state of Louisiana, the Mississippi, around the French there, was sold to the Americans, and they paid for it by borrowing money from the English. So, you don't have to quite sort of understand it. So, in essence, Napoleon got English money to fund an English invasion army, and the balloons were set in him. So Mary Blanchot was very well fated here, and it's sort of the, of course, the papers at the time said, you know, the French are going to come over in balloons, and of course, so the people were hoping, you know, the French would come in balloons, or were hoping not. And of course, there's the story of who did Napoleon not fall in love with, but perhaps not this woman. And then the Restoration, so between the Napoleon Wars out of Russia in 1812, 1813, a truce, and so that France basically was actually quite a good deal at the end of the Napoleon Wars. Then Napoleon off to Elba, and Louis the 14th was put in the Restoration, so it was restored, everything was restored, so revolution bad, no, that's bad, Napoleon War on Laws bad, oh, we're going to have the king back, and so this Sophie was swept back into to power, you know, Napoleon's out, the king, the French king is in, and it's hard to say that that regime change wasn't really happening. Even though you had this great flurry of things, something was still stuck. So she was stuck up there. And then Napoleon, so the king was out again, and Napoleon went back to they got out of Elba, and he did his famous march where he would just, the king's troops would be sent out against him, and he'd be just stand up there and said, "Who do you want to travel? Who do you want to? You can shoot me, but or you can follow me." And then it's sort of like this massive march ran up to. So he just began walking out of Elba, and it's this PR thing. You know, I'm the emperor, and they restored Napoleon for a second time just before Waterloo, and he basically tricked the French the second time in by saying, "Look, the people are giving you a really bad deal here. Come back me again." And so they, the French got up a second army. It's, you know, the Waterloo thing is hard to, you know, the more I read about it, the more I've got sort of ambivalent about how that process went. So the Napoleon, the legend of Napoleon coming back is just this most incredible legend, and eventually they knocked him out. And after that, Sophie Blanchot went back, and at some stage she ditched the hot air balloon to a gas balloon, a hydrogen balloon. Now, because the French discovered hydrogen, how did they do it? They had hot metal, hot iron, and they would pour, heat it up and pour boiling water down it. It's like this, getting water when, hydrogen gas when you have magnesium and acid. It's a sort of similar type of thing, but if you get really hot water and you pour, in an iron pipe, you pour steam, the steam, it decomposes into oxygen, or it oxidizes, it forms rust on the inside, and hydrogen gas, and this was collected and sold and put in balloons. And so Sophie Blanchot basically had, as things came across, cut costs, sold her expensive hot air balloons, had a much more easy to use balloon where you just turn the tap, the balloon inflates, you sit in the chair. And of course, she didn't have a lot of, she sort of cut things up. She did some incredible things, like apparently flying over the Alps, flying to high altitude, you know, very high altitudes. This is sort of just, how on earth could it operate? She must have just had a general view. And so one of the things is that you had to have fireworks as well. Now at night you had to have fireworks. So there's this fateful last journey, and she said, "This is my last journey." So all this fate going into it. She got into the balloon. People warned her about the wind and all this type of stuff. Things weren't quite right. The balloon didn't go up as fast as it should, so she was letting off ballast, but it caught the trees as it was going past, and the trees knocked some of the fireworks. These are slow burning, very colourful flames. I don't think we consider them fireworks now. And she was going to drop pyrotechnics with parachutes. Now you can imagine this. Strikes me as a rather lame demonstration. I think nowadays we'd go, what? Huh? But back then it was a big thing. And of course, what happened is that her balloon began to burn. Now one of the things is that hydrogen gas does not explode. It burns rather benignly. And one wouldn't imagine what the actual fraction of hydrogen gas in her balloons. And so, as the balloon began to leak, she began to desperately throw out ballast, and as the balloon burst in flame, the crowds began cheering because they thought, "Wow, this is it!" And then it went horribly wrong, and she got caught on some sort of one of those pitched French roofs, and the ropes eventually. She survived, but the ropes tangled her and broke her neck and all that type of stuff, and. There was a big shock horror, and everyone gathered money to pay for her children. Imagine all her children, and then they realised she didn't have children, and so they kept the money and donated it to various things associated with her. And she exited, and look, there's just so many aspects to that, and it's something that I think. It's a story. It's got history. It's got women. It's got danger. It's got culture. It's got so many different things. And it's the story of Sophie Blanchard. And you can imagine using that in class to stitch into so many lessons about balloons and pressure and hydrogen and helium and the difference between a hydrogen balloon and helium balloon. Thanks a lot for listening. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.